Welcome back to the TV Talk Machine. It's episode 103. I'm Jason Snell, and across the internet from me, your host, chief TV critic at The Hollywood Reporter, Mr. Tim Goodman. Hi, Tim.
Hey, Jason. Woohoo!
October rolls on.
Yes,
it does.
Without our Giants in it at all.
Yeah, it's kind of... I'm okay with it because of the three World Series wins. I'm kind of in a very different place than if I was like, I know friends who are Cubs fans.
They're just
a balls of stress because for them, it's like, it's never happened. They've never seen it. And we were like that in 2010, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And it's not like that anymore. So it's like, I'm sad that they're not in it, but at the same time, it's fine. Right?
Yeah. I think when you get 3 and 5 years, you're like, yeah, I guess I can't whine about it.
It's a little embarrassing. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fine. Yeah. Yeah. And the possibility of a Cubs Indians World Series, if that comes to pass. Those are, I believe, the two teams that have waited the longest since they last won the World Series.
That would be fantastic.
It would be pretty amazing. Pretty amazing.
I would be for that. Anything but the Dodgers, because that's
yeah,
amazing.
Never Dodgers. Hashtag never Dodgers.
Never Dodgers.
So we got some new shows still coming. The premieres still roll on through October as well, and a couple shows that we talked about last week. Your reviews are now posted, so I guess we should touch base on those again. Berlin Station on Epix. I read your review and said, "Hey, it's like I heard him say all of these things on the TV Talk Machine because it's basically like, why do we care about Epix?" And that's a tough review, but tough but fair.
Yeah, that was a tough one. Because clearly they're trying to establish themselves, and it's a bottom line is people can read the review. Bottom line is you're not going to pay an extra X amount of money for a premium cable subscription service that you may have never even heard of for a show that they offer you that's meh at best. And Dan reviewed their other offering, which was a comedy, and gave it less than meh. So not an excellent start for Epix to try to take money out of your wallet.
You almost need to have that must-see show because you've got to get over the bar of why am I paying extra money for this? And if that one show pushes you, like for me, Game of Thrones,
yep,
pushed me into finally paying for HBO. I was like, all right, you got me.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And that's it for – that's like right on the nose. That's it for everybody. You have to have something that says, all right, I can't miss this. And yeah, I mean, it's expensive to buy those cable channels. So – and as we said many times over as we beat the drum, there's so many other choices. So
that you'll probably insane. Already get.
Yeah, you're already paying for it. Some of them you don't even know you're paying for.
Exactly.
So that's why. Yeah.
So after the debate the other night, my wife and I were watching Colbert, and Hugh Laurie was on. Mm-hmm. And I said to her, and I was sort of fast-forwarding through to get to Nate Silver from 538, because I was amused that one of the baseball writing nerds that I remember from back in the day is so well-known now, and he's going on a talk show. And he looked exactly like you'd expect, which is what happens when you take a nerd and pull him away from his keyboard and put him on a talk show. Really uncomfortable. Really uncomfortable. And it's fine. I love Nate Silver. But, you know, that when you contrast like a regular person, like a nerd at a keyboard with a famous actors and things who sit in those chairs, none of us would come off.
No.
As well. So, but as Hugh Laurie was going past, Lauren says to me, "Hey, Hugh Laurie." And I said, "Yeah, he's got a new show." And I had that moment where I said, Tim talked about it. He's another doctor, another American. He's got a one syllable name that's also the title of the show. And for the life of me, I can't tell you what that is. And it's Chance. I'm looking at it now because you reviewed it too. Mm-hmm. And we'll link that in the show notes. Chance. And I just couldn't do it. I was trying everything like Blue, Iron, Fester, I couldn't come up with a name for the show. Chance is the name. Chance.
Dr. Fester would be troubling.
Yes. Uncle Fester, maybe not.
Uncle Fester, but Dr. Fester is a whole other ball of worries.
Yeah, exactly. So it's Chance. Chance. San Francisco, Hugh Laurie. It's on Hulu. Rolling out. It's doing the Hulu thing, right? So it's rolling out weekly?
It'll be rolling out weekly. And I found the same... Yeah, I ended up liking this, but I ran into the same kind of – it's interesting because I got a lot of positive feedback from people who had read it, including the woman who's the showrunner and one of the executive producers wrote me a nice message.
Any angry publicists?
No angry publicists good. On this one. They were all good.
They're cheery, cheery publicists.
Yeah, yeah. Weirdly enough, I had angry readers from Berlin Station who were like, oh, you don't know what you're talking about. It's great. I'm like, well, you know, your results may vary, but it's not great. But on this one, I got great feedback because it's very similar to the review I did on Falling Water, where I found that I needed to put a lot of extra time into sort of dissecting for Falling Water why I didn't think it was quite there, why I didn't get to its potential fast enough, and why that was a trouble. And for Chance, I had to sort of say, okay, you know, there's some really good writing here, and then sort of unexplained lapses in said writing, and the premise is a little bit off because, you know, he's this neuropsychiatrist, and he's a smart, smart guy, and then he starts making very dumb decisions, and that's usually a sign of weakness when a smart person makes dumb decisions. And so there was these lapses, but then there was, okay, Hugh Laurie, who's great in everything and is fantastic in this, and Ethan Suplee, who is amazing in this. And as I said in the review, it's the Academy Award nominee director who did Room shot the template for this, and everybody who shot after follows his lead. And so San Francisco is shot in a way, if you live in the Bay Area, you will love this show. It's like visually, they get everything right, to the point where Hugh Laurie's character, he's a doctor, obviously, but he's really fascinated with antiques. And they show him in an antique store, and when he walks out up in the corner, I stop the thing, and it's on Jackson Street. That's where all the antique shops are. So they nailed little things like that, which I was like really impressed with. But they shot the city from, like, there's no Fisherman Wharf pictures. The very first bridge you see is the Bay Bridge with all of its beautiful lights. They caught that like beautifully shot. It's just they did a great thing where they shoot the cable cars from low. They get all the fog, and they make the fog seem very both dangerous and at times amorous. It's really kind of interesting, like amorous fog. You just wanted to, it was very romantic, and then there was menace to it as well. But they shot it in, you're going to see San Francisco from pictures, from places and locations and angles that you probably haven't seen in a really long time, certainly not on television, maybe not even for some of the people who have even seen those angles. But they picked everything right, even to the point where I stopped and clapped because there was a scene where they were sitting above a park. Well, okay, San Francisco got a lot of famous parks, and it could have been right in front of those painted ladies, which would have been most of the shots, but it wasn't. It was down Gough Street as you're heading towards where am I saying? It's you're heading towards, well, I can't remember right now, but it's this. It's a little bit of a dingy kind of park. It's you wouldn't be there normally, but it also has a beautiful elevated view that they took advantage of, and I was like, great decision, and constantly that way. And every time they were, so it's shot in San Francisco, and they are not. It is in and on location, right. And when they're driving, they are driving in San Francisco traffic, and it's beautiful. They're in North Beach. They're everywhere. But it seems fresh and exciting. And I got to say, it really becomes a character in this. So that part's right. Hugh Laurie and actually the whole cast is pretty wonderful. So every time it dipped where you're like, oh, God, please. He's making such a dumb decision, which I don't think he would make. The other stuff made up for that. But then, in addition, and this is where it got a little bit complicated, I think the writers would eventually realize, you know what, we need to sort of explain why he's deviating from the norm. It's based on the book by Kem Nunn. And apparently in that, he gives him this backstory because he's helping some woman, which he, you know, there's so many nods to Raymond Chandler as well. But he's helping a woman who is in an abusive relationship with an Oakland homicide detective. And she's been beaten. And then the beating creates this second personality, so a split personality, which he originally doesn't believe and then sees it. But it's that same thing. It's like it's a very traditional, familiar storyline where you know he's going to help this person, and the only way that he can really help her is it's like she's basically saying he's going to kill me, or you're going to have to kill him, or that the hint that there's that, and you're like, oh, we've seen this a million times. But they, I will give them credit. Just when I think it's like, they would write in storylines that sort of explaining why he's having these, making these bad decisions. And they did a pretty good job. They didn't bring it all the way back to even where like, okay, I get it. That makes sense. It was like, okay, that's a pretty creative stretch, but I'll take that. And then you add in Hugh Laurie and the San Francisco shots, and it makes up for the deficiencies. And there definitely are deficiencies. There are moments where you're going to have to say, yeah, I'm just going to have to go with this. Because a smart man like that would not make a very dumb decision.
Okay, I'm intrigued. You've intrigued me. Maybe I'll give it a chance.
Oh, yes. And I tried to tell people, I tried to tell a teacher, don't put that in the headline, because I read everything that I read after I wrote the review. I said, what do you really think? Am I an outlier here? It was like, there was like Robert Bianco's headline from USA Today was, you've got to give it, you know, chances are you will like this show. And then the other one was like, no chance you'll like this. And I was like, oh, please, THR, don't fall into that trap.
Please, no chance puns.
No chance puns.
Okay, so those are reviews we've got out. Now, we've got some premieres coming, and this is where we get to play the game of, like, is Tim going to review this or not? Saturday, BBC America is premiering Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective Agency, which is based on the novel by Douglas Adams. Have you had a chance to – you're reviewing this one, right?
I am reviewing this one, yes.
Had you had a chance to see it yet?
I have not. Because, well, this is very similar to last week and the week before. But this time, there was this DDoS attack, and I can't get into their screening room.
Yeah, the internet ate your homework, is what you're telling me.
Yeah, internet's broken.
Yeah, what can you do?
It's brokesies.
TV critics can't do their job if the internet's broke.
Nope, but they just emailed me not too long ago saying, we will send you a special link that'll get you to these episodes. So I will have that soon, yeah.
All right, good. That's a. It'll be interesting to see how that carries off. I've seen some different reports on that one. It's Douglas Adams. You know, it's a wacky, it's like detective and sort of Doctor Who and kind of whimsical and kind of dark. And it'll be interesting to see how they pull it off, taking from the source material. I only think he wrote a couple of Dirk Gently books, so there's, you know, it's one of those things of, can we capture some of the magic of this property that Douglas Adams worked on and turn it into something more? And this is, I think, the second attempt at that. So,
yeah, I think it is, actually.
Yeah. So we'll see. We'll see. I'm looking forward to your review of that. I got to admit, I'm not super enthusiastic about it because that was not my favorite of Douglas Adams's work. And, and I'm not sure whether it can carry off into a show, but we'll see. Max Landis is going to give it a try, so we'll see.
Yeah, why not, huh? Mm-hmm. Let's see.
So Sunday, not a new premiere, but we should mention Sunday, Walking Dead is back. The new Death Star of television is back on Sunday.
Yes, and the who will die at the hands.
Oh, yes.
Yes, and you know, here's the I'm just going to say that The Walking Dead has gotten to the point where it is the biggest thing on television, and they want to keep this secret of who's going to live and who's died. And remember, I hated the finale. I actually live tweeted the finale, the 90-minute finale where nothing happened until the last minute. So he's got everybody lined up with the baseball bat and the spikes on it, and someone's going to go. And you know, they're all pretty good characters, so you hope that the least likable or the least popular of those characters will die. Hint, probably that's true. But The Walking Dead has got to the point where now they don't need us anymore. Right. So they never even sent the episode out. They're basically like, just watch it and
watch it with the rest
like
of them.
Everybody else. Like everybody else. We don't really care. We don't need you. We're going to get millions and millions and millions of people there. And it's probably better because for the most part, all the real critics, not the fanboys, fangirls, have pretty much jumped off of this series two or three seasons ago. I'll watch it, though.
It's a smart move on their part, I think, because they truly don't need anybody now.
No.
They've got a huge audience. People are going to tune in you know, other than reminding people that it's coming back, which is hard after you go away for a long time. Mm-hmm. Other than that, though, and you could do that by making, you know, producers and cast available for interviews and things. You don't necessarily need to screen the episodes for anybody.
Right. And that's pretty much what they've done. Yeah.
All right. Well, consider all of you consider yourself alerted. The Walking Dead comes back on Sunday if you're still watching it.
And a slight reminder, even though we did touch on this last week, tonight's worldwide simultaneous release tonight is Black Mirror.
Yes, Friday, October 21st, Black Mirror. Mm-hmm. Now out.
I can't wait to watch the rest of them, but the ones I reviewed were very positive.
On Netflix, you can get it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Monday, a show I don't think I heard of.
Wait, there's a show you haven't heard of? Is it called Man with a Plan?
That's it, Man with a Plan. But I just looked it up, and it's Matt LeBlanc's show, apparently. CBS. Because Matt LeBlanc said, I know I got a lot of money from Friends and all, but give me that sweet, sweet CBS sitcom money.
Like Matthew Perry has. In a show that no one watches, The Odd Couple. But thankfully, I drew the longer straw. On Man with a Plan, but it is getting terrible reviews. I think it's a 37 right now on Metacritic. That's bad.
That's bad. That is bad.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Dan Feinberg reviewed it for THR. And the bottom line, because you know I love the bottom lines.
Yes.
A worthy qualitative partner for Kevin Can Wait. Oh, that hurts. It hurts. It burns. Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Mm.
All right. So Dan's – the sum up Dan's review, he has hope that eventually it could work itself into being an average broad sitcom.
Yeah.
You work really hard and try your best, you could be an average CBS sitcom.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
and you're looking at the schedule, so you know more new shows are coming and they're not really good.
Yeah. So Man with a Plan, there it is. You can go watch it if you want. If you really love Kevin Can Wait, then check out Man with a Plan, because it's also got a guy who you remember from another sitcom who's now on a CBS sitcom. So you can check that out. Wednesday, I wanted to mention this.
Yeah.
Rectify returns for its final season. I thought that would be we should plug that.
Yeah, we should. And Dan and I are going to do it'll probably go up on Wednesday. Dan and I are going to do sort of a back and forth, which will be part review of the episodes we have access to, and it'll be part appreciation for the three seasons that came before it. And maybe kind of an analysis of like where it's going to sit in the pantheon of shows. I will say that for me, it is the last existing example of a very short-lived movement called slow TV, and it's carrying the flag of slow TV, and so I'm excited to watch that and have Dan and I go back and forth with that. That'll be up on Tuesday.
All right, and you can check out the final season of Rectify, which starts Wednesday. For those who need to know now. Okay. More CBS. Oh, more CBS is coming Thursday.
Yeah.
Must-see TV night.
Right.
Roaring Littlefield taught us that. Here it is. The Great Indoors, starring TV's Joel McHale.
Yeah, you can see the trend here, right?
I know. Hey, it's another guy from another sitcom who's now got a CBS sitcom.
They all get, you know, Will Arnett went there for a while. Everybody does something on Fox or NBC, and then they get all their creative stuff out, and then no one watches it. But it's like, oh, I loved your cult show that no one watched, and they're like, yeah. And then eventually they all want to make money, and so they come over to CBS, and I drew again. I'm going to say this with a slight little trepidation, because on that particular one, I also drew the longer straw. And I don't have to review that one. Dan has to review that one. Unfortunately, I drew the shorter straw on Pure Genius.
Pure Genius!
Which I think is one of the more annoying titles. Like, there's bad titles. I don't think the Great Indoors is like a pun. And there's bad titles. But I think Pure Genius is annoying. That's an annoying title. But it's from Jason Kadams. So there you go. It's got good people in it.
It's a medical show. Jason Kadams created it. Dermot Mulroney is the star.
Yes, the Dermot Mulroney or whatever the Donald
Dylan McDermott, Dermot Mulroney. They fight. Only one Dermot will survive. Yeah.
So there's probably good people there. I kind of wonder at what extent Jason's going to be involved in this. Mm-hmm. He has so many other things planned. So who knows? Maybe it's another example of, hey, producers also want to go to CBS, because wouldn't it be great if they could just plan a hit there that gets millions of viewers and just lasts for a long time, and they can have one of their junior associates eventually up and run it after like two or three episodes, and they still get all those lovely checks. I don't know. Maybe that's part of it, but I am putting that one off until the last second.
So the premise is a maverick billionaire from Silicon Valley decides to build a hospital unlike any other, and his partner is a maverick talented surgeon who will lead the effort to take care of all these patients with rare and weird diseases. So it's a couple of mavericks and a house, basically, it sounds like.
It does sound like House, because everybody wants House on there. Not to be confused with
Chance.
Go ahead. Yes, there you go. Not to be confused with Chance. Chance is a very dark series, which is good.
I almost said Community Chest, but I went with Chance instead. Monopoly jokes. Anyway, it does sound like a House kind of premise with a little bit of a, maybe it's got a little bit of a cutting edge. Having not seen it, the idea that it's like billionaire and it's this super, you know, special hospital that saves people. But I don't know. In the end, it's going to be weird diseases, right? Solving weird diseases every week.
I think so. And, you know, the other troubling thing about that is that Patrick Wilson was in a very similar type show like that, although there was a ghost involved. But, you know, it's like, I don't know. I don't know.
Wow. There was a ghost involved.
There was a ghost.
Is that a gifted involved man?
Yes,
that a was gifted, a gifted man, because his, yeah, he, his dead wife, that's my dead wife helps me in during surgery. The series.
Right. Oh, memories are so much fun.
Oh my goodness. Well, that was 5 years ago. Nobody remembers that show. They can bring it right back.
I did.
Yeah. There was a ghost involved. That's the best part of that. That's what nailed that one down. Like another medical show with Patrick Wilson. It could be anything, but it's like, but there was a ghost. Oh
my God.
You mean a gifted man. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Margot Martindale was in that. Completely wasted in that.
Yeah. Well, it didn't make it. Mm. It didn't make it. The Gifted Man. It's not still on like The Odd Couple.
Yeah.
Which is still on.
I have one more show to go, by the way. You've almost got to it.
So the other show that I've got down here is Friday on Amazon, Good Girls Revolt.
That is the one. Yeah. It is so far in advance. I have not seen that yet. There was a very interesting panel there when Amazon was at TCA in the summer, and it's got a pretty interesting case. It's based on a real life story where the female employees of Newsweek, 46 of them, I believe it's set in 1970. They brought a lawsuit, a sex discrimination lawsuit against Newsweek. One of those writers was Nora Ephron, and I believe she's played by Grace Gummer in this one. So this is that story, and I think that I think that the goal is to give it this feeling at the beginning, at least, of like, okay, we have all these women who are in Newsweek, and they're writers and journalists and wannabe journalists and all this stuff, and they have to struggle against, obviously, this completely male-dominated situation. James Belushi, and there's the guy who I love, but I can never pronounce his name. It's
Chris Diamantopoulos.
Yes, Chris Diamantopoulos, or Loose.
Sure.
And he's Greek. Mm-hmm. But Diamond Chris.
Yeah.
And so he's in it. Hunter Parrish from Weeds is in it. There's some interesting, Anna Camp is in it as well. So there's interesting people in it. My worry is that it seems kind of one note to me. So we'll see what they can do with it. The extended trailer and the session for it, I have to say, was interesting, and then it kind of bogged down in, like, haven't we seen this before? So we'll see. We'll see how it's handled.
All right. That's Amazon next Friday.
Next Friday. So yeah.
All right. Well, that's it for the what shows are coming up portion of the show that we do, especially in the fall when there's so many of them.
Well, it's kind of crazy, isn't it, to think that it's the end of October and we're still, like, I mean, deep into October and we're still getting new shows. I know that it's true that we're going to have the 52-week schedule, but I don't know how any of these shows kind of stand out. I don't know, right? You know, it's like Woody Allen series just didn't pop, and I've heard no one talk about that.
Yeah.
Literally not one person I've ever said, hey, not even to me, like at a party or something, where, did you review that? Like, just no one. It's not on anybody's radar, and I think that that's more and more common these days because there's just – because one thing we don't talk about here on the podcast, other than, like, stuff that's – yeah, like Black Mirror, because it's original in its own way when it comes back. But we did say Rectify because it's just, you know, it's historic. But we don't really get into, like, oh, hey, remember, like you know, Crazy Ex-Girlfriend's back. It's a great series. But all these other ones that they're coming back, returning series that we don't really care about. I guess Crazy Ex-Girlfriend is not a good example there. But all these returning series that we don't ever talk about on the podcast because we don't really watch them. They're not good. People do watch those. And
yes.
Then they don't have room for new shows. So I continue to be mystified on, like, when is this bubble going to burst, right? Because I no one has ever said to me, God, Tim, I can't wait till Good Girls Revolt comes out, right? I don't know. I don't know how these shows stay in business.
Yeah, it's I mean, my DVR is full of stuff now, and I have no idea when I'm going to watch any of it. And that, even just the shows that are back that I watch.
Yeah. And like, here's a perfect example from Thursday. It's like last year people were raving, like, oh, like, and I know that CBS was like, it's the most watched new sitcom of the year, Life in Pieces. And you're just, I was like, I've never heard anybody talk about Life in Pieces for coming into season two, but it starts on Thursday. So, I don't know.
It's tough. Mm-hmm. Too much TV, times of confusion.
Yeah.
It's all a thing. Do you want to do a few letters?
Let's do that.
All right. So my nemesis, Alan in the 415.
This is one of my favorite, like, uprisings.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All the Alans on the Facebook page are my nemesis at this point. So Alan says, Tim has concerns that viewers of Falling Water may become irritated because it's so hard to tell what's real and what's not. I have a similar irritation with Mr. Robot. I know you guys don't feel the irritation with Mr. Robot, but I hope you will at least acknowledge that both shows have a similar challenge. Jason's loyal opposition, Alan in the 415.
What do you think?
Well, I don't agree with Alan. Of course I don't agree with Alan. I feel like, for whatever reason, I mean, he's right in the sense that these are both shows where you have to question what you're seeing and whether it's real or not. But I feel like I kind of understand what the rules are of Mr. Robot, and I'm willing to go with it, and that I understand that what I'm seeing is what's happening in Elliot's head, and that it will be revealed about how it ties into reality. And and I think, having not seen Falling Water, from your review of it, it sounds more like there's a question of, does this make sense? Is it playing fair, or is it just messing with us? And Mr. Robot in the long game, it feels to me like it is playing fair, because it is showing us what's actually going on in Elliot's head. And when there is a reveal, it usually makes sense. It was usually laid out in advance so that you can see why they played the way they did, and you understand it going forward. And I know that's a fine point to make, but I think that's the thing, is, like, weird hallucinatory stuff is fun if it plays fair, but if it's just screwing with the audience, then it's not, you know, then it's not so good.
Right. And I felt like and this is a sort of a step to the side on this argument. I felt that the season one conceit of Mr. Robot was brilliant, and, like, that had everybody talking. It's like the things that they were able to do in the way they shot it, super
right.
creative. So that you could go back, and I've done this with my class, my visual studies class, and I show them how you watched something, but if you were to pay super close attention, that how much forethought went into it. Like, okay, we're going to open this door and there's going to be three people at the door, but the person who opened the door is actually very subtly only looking at one person. And like little clues like that were dropped throughout this thing. And so you go back and you kind of applaud, also the fact that it was so smart and sneaky, Mr. Robot, where it's like, and we've talked about this before, it's like, yeah, we know that you caught on to our wink, wink, our little conceit here, our little trick, but we always wanted you to, and we always knew you'd figure it out, and we wanted you to figure it out because, boo, here's three other ones you weren't expecting. Whereas in Falling Water, it's just like, yeah, I just feel like it's its own ball of confusion at the same time, where it's like not giving me a sense of why I should keep watching it other than it just wants to show me a bunch of dreams without telling me what's behind it. Hmm. So,
but I do admit that this is a fine point. And if you're not on a larger scale, there are shows that are showing you things that aren't necessarily happening in real, quote unquote, real life. And that if you're somebody who that stuff frustrates, you could put them in the same bin together. But I feel like you can also pick them apart and say they're not the same. They're not doing the same thing inside that bin of showing you things that aren't real.
Right. Exactly.
But I appreciate hearing from the loyal opposition.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go to Dan from the 615. Nashville,
ooh,
Tennessee, music city.
Mm-hmm.
Dan writes in with a new Not a Thing.
Okay,
says they're doing a Gilmore Girls rewatch, and they're in season 4. Surprisingly, this is not a coffee-related Not a Thing for Gilmore Girls, which is surprising. He says, season 4, episode 21, a cellist is playing in a quartet, and I noticed the bow is flipped backwards, so the horsehair is away from the instrument, and the stick is against the strings. I only played cello for 1 year in grade school, but I remember enough to know that that doesn't make music. I'm guessing this is a technique used during filming to limit noise, but when it comes to playing music, it's definitely not a thing.
Wow, that is a phenomenal catch. That is very funny.
From the archives, from the deep cut.
I love that one. I will add that one of my, we keep talking about these Not a Things, and last week when I was watching tons and tons of television, the whole thing where the iPhone is lit up against the face.
Oh my God.
So distracting to me now. I think our listeners have ruined it now. I'm like, oh, there is the phone's on.
Yeah. Yep. No, the Not a Thing. It's great, and also it ruins everything. But we appreciate it. This is. I'm going to file this with the Mozart in the Jungle conducting Not a Thing that we got from people who actually know about how orchestras work.
And this, I have a little aside that's not a Not a Thing, but it's kind of funny because it relates to Apple products and Apple phones. In Chance, his it wouldn't make sense because he's a doctor. He's not going to have one of those crazy like horns that go. He's not going to choose the horn or the duck call for his incoming sound on his calls. But the Dr. Chance, he chooses the little sonar, little boop, boop, and that's kind of one of the things that I do to wake up. And so it was like playing tricks in my brain. I was like, oh, I'm sleepy now. It's like, it was weird. I think how sounds can trick you just by what you're choosing for your ringtone.
Yeah, I keep telling people, somebody was writing and asking for the theme song from one of the podcasts I do, and they wanted to use it as an alarm. And I said, don't ever make any noise that you like the sound of your alarm, because you will hate it.
Mm-hmm.
Like the one I use, the xylophone one that I use when I'm traveling and all that, I hate it so much.
Right.
Stupid xylophone waking me up. And so it's like, don't, you'll ruin it.
Stupid xylophone.
They're the worst. Hate those xylophones. Awesome. We have one more letter, and then we have a bunch of suggestions for quintessential California shows for Dean. But here's the last letters from My Vogon Poetry, still in the 716 MVP.
Mm-hmm.
I just got done watching Clever Man, and I enjoyed aspects of the series, but some of the special effects were very low budget, and the concept was more promising than the acting and writing delivered. The capability of very high production values on TV is so high. Do we take them for granted? And while TV shows keep amping them up to try and grab our attention, I hope more shows take the rectify route and explore characters and themes in the long-form storytelling that TV allows. So this is a question about where television is going. Are we, you know, will the production values, you know, have we, at what point, if you're doing movie-level production values on TV, is it, can you take things seriously that aren't at that level? Can you watch shows that aren't Game of Thrones and still accept them if we get to that point?
Well, yeah, I think you can. I can sort of separate that in my mind, but I think we're definitely moving in that direction because anything to pop out, right? Anything to pop off the screen in some way, even if you reverse it and go totally lo-fi, anything that looks different is going to get noticed, and just getting noticed is more than half the battle these days.
Yeah, I think that's right. My Vogue on Poetry here makes a very good point, which is, what's TV really good at? Like, TV can now do special effects like movies can to a certain degree, and that's great. But what TV's good at is long-form storytelling. He's right about that. Like, that's why, you know, movies now are all short stories. They've always been short stories, but like, movies are short stories and TV is novels now.
Right.
And a lot of very talented creative people want to do TV because it lets them tell those stories that you're never going to get in 2 hours on a movie screen. And so that's always going to be the strength of television.
Mm-hmm.
All right. You want to hear some suggestions for quintessential California TV shows for Dean?
Yes,
We'll keep this rolling. This is not the end of it, but we have a few, and send in the ones that you think of too. But this is a good list to start with. So Art from the 425 wrote in and said, "Come on, guys, Baywatch with the Hoff." All right, Baywatch.
Oh, boy.
I guess you got to put that on the list. I guess
I would say no, but
I would say no too. But you know, it is a form of California. Mm-hmm. It's how Germany thinks of California. Baranduin, our Lord of the Rings themed listener,
yes,
the old Brandywine River, she says Silicon Valley might be a good suggestion.
Well,
for
yeah,
modern California.
Mm-hmm.
Cal in the +44 and Olivier both suggested Californication.
Oh, a show that I really hated.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, it's kind of a gross show, but it does have it in the title, so it's got that going for it.
Yeah, that's true. I missed that completely.
Terrence wrote in and suggested Veronica Mars and Terriers.
Terriers.
Oh, Terriers.
The short-lived Terriers.
Gone but not forgotten. Veronica Mars, yep. I thought was a pretty good suggestion. Again, that's Neptune is basically San Diego. Fictional San Diego.
Yeah. But you know what? That's also really good, Neptune. You're right. And you should have picked that up last week.
Yeah, one of my San Diego shows guys. Along with Simon and Simon. Yeah, Terrence was raising me on Simon and Simon with Veronica Mars.
Mm-hmm.
Chuck wrote in to suggest some really good ones. Rockford Files.
Yeah, quintessential.
Dragnet, which I think we mentioned. And Outer
12.
I did
mention that. Yeah, I mentioned that.
Yeah, Rockford Files. That's pretty good. That's that's a good one. That might be it. That might be my vote there, but we'll see. And Adam wrote in with a whole bunch of them. 8 is Enough, which is that set in California? I don't even know.
That did I never if it was set in California, I
it
never knew
matter.
That it was.
Yeah. Nash Bridges.
Oh, San Francisco shot.
Mm-hmm. Melrose Place, Dragnet, 77 Sunset Strip. Adam's vote is Nash Bridges. TV's John Johnson. It was shot in San Francisco. I'll give it
yeah,
that.
Yeah, and I was living there when it happened, and I was so annoyed to like turn the corner at night and like be gridlocked, and you couldn't get out, and you'd have to like.
You know, Cheech was there,
mm-hmm.
and Don Johnson was there.
Yeah,
and Goran in the +46 said, "How about The Mentalist as the California show of choice? It has Robin Tunney. What kind of monster doesn't love Robin Tunney?"
Yeah, my runner-up I struggled with Mentalist.
Yeah,
constantly.
Yeah, it's not a great show. Although what I like about it is they are all agents of some sort of FBI-like California law enforcement, state of California law enforcement force, which I always found to be one of the most ludicrous things ever on television. They're like the CBI or something, the California investigative arm or whatever. It's just ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. But he's the mentalist. What can you do? And he says, my runner-up is Blunt Talk. I don't even know if it takes place in California. I just wanted to talk about Blunt Talk. Okay.
Wow. Okay, well, now that you said all the California stuff, what about 24?
Yeah, I suppose. Some of 24 is in California. Not all of it.
Isn't it most of it?
Well, I don't know. They did one
the
in
first season for sure.
Yeah, they did one in London. Didn't they do one in New York?
Yeah, they moved around a little bit. But he's still,
Washington D.C. is a factor in a lot of those episodes.
I believe the CTU was.
Yeah, sure, in L.A. Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, I'm right now. I think my favorite is The Rockford Files. That's a very L.A. show. And that's okay. Even as a Northern California guy, that was that's classic. That's golden age.
That's TV, golden age.
Hall of Fame TV right there.
And you could pair that with Streets of San Francisco, which is one of our early picks.
That's true. And you could get a really nice vintage vibe from both of those. So those are some suggestions for Dean. And that's it. I think we put TVTM 103 in the books.
We have.
That's right. But we'll be back next week with another edition, and there'll be more television because
more shows.
There always is. But here are the numbers. You can reach us, email us, podcast@tvtalkmachine.com, facebook.com/tvtalkmachine. You can post there. And if your name is Alan, you can give me a hard time because that's what the Alans do on the Facebook page. And you can tweet at us at TVTM. I'm Jay Snell on Twitter. Tim is Bastard Machine on Twitter. And that's how you reach us. All right, we'll talk to you all again next week, released simultaneously, worldwide, all of that. But until then, bye, Tim. Have a good weekend.
All right, you too. Bye-bye.